Qatar bursts onto the calendar with a myriad of surprises, not least that you can overtake if you have the tyres. But with today's failures, that's less than guaranteed. Welcome back to the Grid Talk podcast. Hosting today will be me, Owen Medford, and joining me are Tom Horrocks from the Monkey Seat podcast.
Hello.
Philip Matthew from the Grip Strip podcast.
Hello.
And F1 expert Sam Thatcher.
Hello.
Today we'll be giving our analysis and reaction to the Qatar Grand Prix. Before I get into the full show, I'd like to give a shout out to our wonderful review from Drew1548. So thank you for that 5-star review. Some lovely kind words there. If you'd like to get a shout out at the top of the next show, please take five to give us a 5-star review. We're now streaming the show live on YouTube, so be sure to like our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Formula One Grid Talk, and ring the bell icon so that you're notified of future shows. So it was a pretty commanding win for Lewis Hamilton. Even Max Verstappen didn't look like he was going to get anywhere near him. But I think I'll start with you, Sam. It's just, cool. Yeah. You know, it was kind of, you know, what with Max Verstappen's 5th-place grid drop, I think it's surprising to have even seen Max Verstappen anywhere near the top three at this point.
Yeah, no, of course, that decision came very close to the start of the race. To the FIA, quite a long time to come to that decision, along with the other penalties. But we saw what Lewis did in Brazil by just sliding through the field, and we saw the level that both of these guys are on. Max cutting through the cars he had to pretty much straight away, and by lap 3 or 4 he was already behind Lewis. But then that was an already 4-second gap by that point, so there was no chance of him really having any chance of the win today. It was a commanding display from Lewis, and that's brought him, what's that, 8 points behind Max in the title, which means it is likely going to go to Abu Dhabi. But I think we saw today the fact that these two guys are clearly a level above from like the rest of the grid, really, because they were lapping like 1 or 2 seconds faster than everyone else on the field. Commanding display from Lewis. It wasn't a race that was, the race was okay at the end. It wasn't a great race up until then. But yeah, as you said, a commanding display from Lewis once again.
Yeah, really good work from Lewis Hamilton, obviously, there. You know, got it on pole and just kind of romped away with it by the fastest lap. Chasing up, though, was Fernando Alonso. Ridiculously good performance, bearing in mind that Sergio Perez got up there and started from 12th and was very, very, very quick. Would you say it's maybe a lucky result for Fernando?
I don't think so, Owen. I think he had the pace. He was in a very, very good spirits the whole weekend. He enjoyed the track. This is the Fernando Alonso of old this weekend. You know, he seemed loose, seemed very engaged, and he knew in qualifying, he had great pace. He was in there in Q3 and soft tires. I think really the only other car that was faster than him was Gasly, and we'll talk about the nonsense that happened with them later. But the Alpine team managed their strategy very well. They had their focus. They wanted, Fernando wanted to get Lewis and get him in turn one, which was fine in his mind. And he made a very good start and got ahead of Gasly and basically was able to dictate his part of the race. And then it also basically set a whole chain reaction of events for Alpine to go and gain 25 points in the Constructors' Championship after coming in level with AlphaTauri this weekend, and both AlphaTauris being in the top 10 or being up there to start the race. So one of the best performances Fernando's had in his return, one driver of the day, and this Fernando Alonso, if this is the kind of productivity and the pace and the whole thing, harkens back to his heyday, and it also kind of gives hope if Alpine have a good car for next year for him to go and battle the likes of Hamilton, Verstappen, and others that might have pace. But it was great to see Fernando Alonso finished third. Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, you could say, well, I think the one lucky thing, if you're going to talk about luck, was the VSC. Because if the VSC doesn't come out there for Latifi, it's possible we might have had another failure, and it might have been on Alonso's car. In the end, they ran two laps basically under VSC, and that more or less saved whatever. But it didn't sound like the Alpine was having as big of an issue with their left front tires as some of the other teams did. But, I mean, honestly, it's just cool to see one of the greats, Formula One greats, a former world champion, get back on the podium for the first time in 7 years, which is crazy to think. But, of course, he's had a couple of spells being out of the sport too. So, great to see it. It's cool. And Alpine probably has just won themselves that position in the Constructors' Championship, barring some miracle happening in the next two races.
Yeah, it's now quite a large gap between Alpine and AlphaTauri. Next, we have a driver who's normally pretty good at managing his tyres. Now, I said he started 12th. He actually started 11th with the way the grid penalties played out and things like that. Fourth place for Sergio Perez. That's basically completely unexpected with the people that were in front of him at the start of the race, Tom.
Well, yeah, I think, though, that with the second best car and starting where he did, fourth place on the face of it would have been what he would have been looking for. But he'd be disappointed to see that, obviously, with Bottas out, that he's finished behind an Alpine. So that's definitely not really in the script for the weekend. I think the strategy didn't help. He seemed to have the pace to challenge those guys up there without the need for this second stop. We know how good Perez is with his tyres, and you know some drivers did make the one stop work, and obviously Norris was unlucky with his, given you know he stopped so late. I thought he'd be the one that would be able to get to the end, but certainly Perez, with the way that he looks after tyres, a one stop certainly would have worked. It looked like Bottas was going to make it work on a one stop, so why Perez needed to, I have absolutely no idea. And I think in the end, you know, he was right there with Fernando Alonso on track, and then the strategy just put him behind. And I don't think he would have caught him even without the VSC. He may have kind of just got onto his back end, but I'm not entirely convinced that he would have passed him even without the virtual safety car. So for me, that's a bit of an own goal from Red Bull. It's not going to make a huge difference in the championship. From there, especially with Bottas not scoring, it still helped them overall. So, but yeah, overall, I was a little bit disappointed, but great overtaking from Checo. He had a really strong race from his side of things, but unfortunately, I think his team have let him down a little bit with his strategy today.
Yeah, it seems a little bit like a sort of a swing and a miss there. You know, copying everything Max did, it put them a little bit far behind. After that, we've got the other Alpine driver, Esteban Ocon. I think, you know, as we've said just you know a couple of seconds ago, it's basically solidified Alpine Renault's thing in the championship. But it's a solid drive from Esteban there, and you know even sort of tried to hold off Sergio Perez in a much quicker Red Bull, didn't he, Sam?
Yeah. So Esteban was one of the people that tried the one stop coming in around lap 24, I believe. So yeah, he took those tyres quite a long way to the end, around like 30 something laps. So yeah, it was a good drive from Esteban. He's always one of those people that kind of goes a little bit under the radar. You don't really hear too much about him other than his win in Hungary this year. I think he's had a good season. Definitely improved from last year. But yeah, as you said, did some good defending against Perez to kind of delay him a bit in his pursuit of Alonso. So yeah, he might have saved, might have held up Perez a couple more seconds than he kind of should have done, because he can't really do much more than he did. We saw that was one of the only kind of real battles on track I remember, like going for quite a few corners other than the first corner. I don't really remember many other battles around the track that went into the middle of the lap as well, so that was good to see. A decent drive from him. And as you said, there's now about 25 or so points between Alpine and AlphaTauri, so they're not going to get anywhere near McLaren. So yeah, I'd say that's pretty much solidified fifth, as we said earlier, unless AlphaTauri can somehow pull another magic trick out of the hat and win one of the last few races, which I really don't see happening.
Yeah, you say it doesn't see it happening, but I'll be honest, if anything, I've been taught anything in this Formula One, is you're going to get some car that doesn't deserve to be there up in the top 10 or even in the top 3. Now, we've got Lance Stroll, and I think Lance Stroll, Phil, would be almost someone that you could kind of say would, like, he's sort of showing where Bottas could have been if Bottas hadn't had the issues that he did. It's a really good drive there from Aston Martin, isn't it?
Yeah, considering they didn't have outright pace this weekend, they were behind some of these other midfield teams in certain areas. I mean, they were able to benefit from Ferrari's struggles, McLaren's struggles this weekend, but Ferrari was able to recover to a point. The one stop actually seemed to work out for Stroll, and he maximized his race. Unfortunately for Vettel, the strategy on the other side didn't work out so well. But, you know, for Aston, they're basically locked into their spot in seventh in the constructors. So they're just kind of running their own race. For Stroll to get one of his better finishes of the year is good. It's more of consolidation just to get towards the end of the year and move towards what the new formula for them. But for him, relative to what he is, I mean, that's a pretty good performance, top 10. That team has struggled at times this year to even be in the top 10, not only in qualifying, but in the races too. So they maximized their situation here today and got as many points as they could, at least in one end of the Aston Martin garage.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly maximized the points, got the majority of them. After that, we've got, you know, vital for the constructors' battle, basically. We've got the two Ferraris, got Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc, Tom. That's probably the final nail in the coffin, I would say, for the constructors' battle over McLaren. Do you see any way for McLaren to get back in, even with sort of some freak races?
You've taken the exact words out of my mouth there. Final nail in the coffin. That's exactly what I was going to say. It's 39.5 points now, the difference in the Constructors' Championship. It was looking like, you know, a potential, you know, an outside chance of a podium maybe for a McLaren, with both Ferraris low end points at best. And then, you know, a couple of punches and a bit of bad luck for Lando. And all of a sudden now they're back into a situation where both Ferraris have outscored both McLarens. And yeah, there's with the two races that are left, I mean, even if McLaren are the stronger team, I can't see them getting anywhere near Ferrari now. It's comfortable now for Ferrari. They've just got to bring this home and push forward. Now, I have to say, it's a strong performance from Leclerc to end up in eighth from where he started, and to be so close behind his teammate, you know, so early in the race as well, given the margin that Sainz has had on Leclerc all weekend. That was a strong performance from Leclerc. I mean, it's kind of where he should be, but it's a good recovery from where he was to getting to where he should be. That was quite impressive. And Carlos Sainz, a little bit of an anonymous race, really, just kind of stuck behind Stroll and Ocon at the end there, and kind of making those tyres last. But yeah, a pretty strong performance there from Ferrari as a whole, given where they were. So yeah, that's, as you say, done and dusted for third. So apparently their car for next season is finished. So let's see what that's going to be for next year, because if it's finished already, then surely they can't be optimizing everything. So it looks like it'll probably be reliable, but will it be ultimately fast? We're not entirely sure. So but it is all kind of starting to align for Ferrari, though. Things do look like they're going in the right direction. So it's looking like it could be a strong year for them next year.
Yeah, quite encouraging for Ferrari there. Great team effort, as you've said, you know, helped by sort of who I'm moving on to next, which is Lando Norris. Bearing in mind, he started from fourth, you know, obviously promoted by the penalties for Verstappen and Bottas. You know, that's, yeah, obviously it's the dirty side of the grid, so it's not great for the getaway. And I think he didn't have too great a start, Sam, but ninth from fourth, starting fourth is quite poor for McLaren.
Yeah, as you say, Lando did not have a great start. I think he got a bit squeezed out in the first corner. And then, yeah, he was running quite well up until then. He was one of the last people to come in for his first stop, I believe. Took the tyres quite a long way. And then, yeah, he was running kind of ahead of Perez for quite a while, behind Alonso, not really kind of doing much. And when Perez came out for, from his second stop, I didn't really think that Perez was going to catch him, even him, let alone Alonso, before the end of the race, because Perez was like at least 8 seconds behind him with the other cars to overtake as well. But then, of course, we saw a few punches happen. Looked like Lando got a minor puncture on his front left, which sent him into the pits. And I suppose that's all they could do really at that point, is get Lando in and put some new tyres on him to limit the damage. Obviously, if they just keep him out and then he's got to do a whole lap on the ruined tyre, then they're going to lose even more points. So in the grand scheme of things, it's obviously not a good result, but I don't really think they could have done much more. And as we saw, so many people were struggling in their tyres today. But I don't know, maybe you kind of question his managing the tyres, because... I don't know. Because he was one of the last people to come in. So it's kind of surprising that his tyres were that off, unless he just ran over one of the curbs, the abrasive curbs, which we had this weekend. So yeah, I'm not sure really. But yeah, as you say, it's not a good result for McLaren. And as Tom was just saying, these last few races have really put them like in the coffin. I'll say it again. for the constructors, because we've seen Ferrari keep finishing like one after the other, don't they? Like the last three races, they've just finished like fifth and sixth, and now like was it eighth and ninth this time? So seventh and eighth. Bad day for McLaren overall, really.
Yeah, weekend they want to put behind them. Yeah,
definitely.
After that, we have Sebastian Vettel. Now, if you were to just look at the starting grid and then look at the race result, Phil, it would seem that was kind of a bit of an anonymous race. But it's that doesn't really tell the story, does it?
No, he had started seventh in the race, I believe, and then there was tenth, but I swear he was up there early in the race, but he had a really brutal start. And that made his race. He fell down to 17th and had to get through the traffic. They had to do the different pit strategies with him. So that was my mistake earlier. I thought it was strategy, but it was his bad start. But to battle back, get a top 10 finish, get a double point score for the team in a weekend where you had only one Ferrari, you had one McLaren in there, both Alpines are up there, both AlphaTauris are up there. So for Aston to get both their cars into the points, good battling there. He made some good overtakes too. So Vettel has been up there this year in terms of the top overtakers or whatever. They have that countdown they have on every week. And I'm like, I don't know, like, what it really means, because nobody sees most of them because they don't show them. I think last two races of the season, we'll see. He's done well at Abu Dhabi over time in his career. We'll see what the new track, where that puts the Aston Martin group. But I think now it's become a good point consolidation or damage. The new term for Red Bull is damage limitation, seemingly, when they're not doing other things or saying other incendiary things. So in this case, this is point consolidation for Aston Martin, when at times this year they haven't been on pace. So they took the most out of this weekend, and Vettel was able to recover after a brutal start to the race.
Yeah, really, really good recovery drive, just based on where he went back to where he ended up. The driver that he sort of stole that last point off is probably someone that Alpine will have been glad he did. Tom, we've got Pierre Gasly in in 11th, sorry, finishing 11th. That's hugely disappointing, isn't it?
It's the worst strategy of the day, without a shadow of a doubt. And it's happened time and time again at AlphaTauri. They just don't seem to be able to read a race. And I still maintain that car is in a pocket between the Ferraris and the McLarens and then the Aston Martins and the Alpines. And how they're not, now it looks pretty certain they're not going to finish fifth in the championship. And how that happens, it just begs belief, because Pierre Gasly is driving the wheels off that car. If there was somebody anywhere near as good as Pierre Gasly in the other car, and the strategy team just did the minimum, they went for the average strategy that was not positive, not negative, just went straight down the line, that team would be comfortable behind Ferrari and ahead of Alpine and Aston Martin, behind McLaren, sorry, and ahead of Alpine and Aston Martin in the constructors. That fifth place would be absolutely nailed on, and they could even potentially be pushing pushing McLaren as well. But it's just been horrendous all season. They've been, I would say, out of the 20 races we've had so far, there's probably been 8 races that have been negatively affected by AlphaTauri's strategy, and it's happened again today. That guy was sitting there in third place, fourth place. He was in a fight with Alonso, and then first guy in the pits. And when they know the undercut's not going to be strong, committing to a two-stop incredibly early before you know what's happening. And then the guy that was originally scheduled for a one-stop had been looking after his tyres and was on for a one-stop, got a puncture, fortunate enough to get back into the pits in time to then go for a sub-optimal two-stop strategy, drives past him with fresher tyres like he's not even there. It just goes to show how bad that strategy was from AlphaTauri, that Norris could be so far ahead of him on a suboptimal strategy when they were behind him on the road before he made his first stop. It's just not good enough from AlphaTauri. Pierre Gasly has done nothing wrong at all today. He's stuck up in traffic. It took him 5 laps to get past the Haases. Then he's up behind the Alfa Romeos, and his strategy is completely gone. Norris comes in after his first stop, and he's just behind Gasly. You know, it's just, how is that supposed to be? How is that supposed to be a strategy that's optimal for the race? And it isn't. And I want Gasly to be in a car that can show off what he can do, that, you know, in a position where he can actually get results that he's deserving of, rather than just constantly being shuffled back out of contention where he shouldn't be. So, yeah, I never expected to have a massive rant about Gasly, because he's not even my favourite driver, to be honest. So, but yeah, that's just, I don't like to see people getting screwed like that. And he is being screwed on a weekly basis by that team at the moment.
I was going to say, there was a lot of talk at the start of the race of if Max Verstappen came up against a fairly rapid Pierre Gasly, would he be conveniently pitted out of the way so that he wouldn't take any points away from the great and mighty Max? That's for you cynics out there to debate. After that, we've got Daniel Ricciardo. He's started 14th and he's ended 12th, Sam. I think based on the way the car is, it wasn't going particularly well. So that's, Is that a good result?
Well, unlike Tom, I'm struggling to find much to say about Daniel Ricciardo here. unlike Tom with Gasly a second ago. Yeah, it's kind of another one of these weekends that he's had this season where he's been kind of anonymous. Qualifying, not a good performance, really. I know the car is probably not at the best it's been as has been at the points of the season. Of course, he has got that race win, I don't know what it is with Danny Rick. He seems to have a few good races where he's like, oh yeah, he's really in tune with the car now. He's gonna shoot up to the level that he has been in the past with like Renault and Red Bull and whatever. And then he has these other weekends where he just falls down the pack. You don't really know what he's doing. He doesn't go through the pack at all. It's kind of hard to find much to say about him, really. I mean, he did a one stop. And when you start as far down as he did, then that's a very good strategy to do. But he just didn't seem to have the pace to really maximize it and get up into the points like some of the other one stop runners did. And that maybe just shows the pace of the McLaren around this track, perhaps. It just seems like the McLaren's really taken a bit of a downturn in the last few races in terms of his overall pace. And they had David Beckham in the garage today. That didn't really do anything for him, did it? Really, you think maybe someone like that with his pedigree. I don't know, maybe get motivated or something. But not a good day for Ricciardo, really, in McLaren overall, as we said.
Yeah, no star power to help help McLaren at all. Didn't really work out for them. Next, we've got we've got Yuki Tsunoda. Not a terrible race. First guy to pit, and it just kind of, it really didn't work out for him. You know, he started eighth and he's finished 13th, and it's, you know, I imagine Phil, it's probably going to be a similar story to what happened to Gasly here.
I can't follow Tom's rant on Pierre Gasly and the horrible AlphaTauri strategy. All I can say is it's AlphaTauri for you. When you have two cars in the top 10, you've generally had pace all weekend, and you figured out a way to not only get beat in down old country way by Alpine, who goes and gets a podium, and you come into this race tied in points with Alpine and the constructors with a legitimate chance to take that lead going two races to go. And now you've knocked yourself right out of it with horrible strategy. You know that it was going to be harder for Tsunoda to recover. He did make some overtakes later in the race, but of course he's younger, he's still learning, but he's not making as many mistakes as he was earlier in the year. So for that, that's a positive. The net negative, though, is if you're going to lose positions on the start, which it seems to be a regular trend for him too, it's going to be hard to make up places. And then you give bad strategy on top of it, and it's an unfortunate result there. But the car's in one piece. You have two races to go in his rookie year, likely rookie of the year, by default, basically. But still, at least get through these next two races. Going to a new track again in 2 weeks' time will possibly give an advantage for him, like this weekend was prior to the race. I think AlphaTauri's race pace is a big problem, but considering where we're at in the year, it may just be that's what they have and they don't really care. But you left a lot of points on the table, to be fair, the way this race played out. There was a lot of opportunity there, and AlphaTauri basically took it out of the hands of their drivers very early and left with nothing, you know, which is money too at the end of the year when it comes to the constructor standings.
Yeah, luckily AlphaTauri are in this sort of privileged position where they don't have to worry too much about the what the accountants say. After that, we have Kimi Raikkonen, who shot up into the top three of most overtakes of the year. But at this point, it doesn't really mean anything, does it, Tom?
No, and I've just become the first person ever to click on the crypto.com Formula One Overtake Awards website just to check on the standings. And it's got Lance Stroll and Kimi Raikkonen tied on 107 overtakes. Can anyone name any of them? Because I don't ever remember Kimi Raikkonen making an overtake this season. There's certainly not particularly. He's just one of the most. He's in the anonymous team at the back that just don't. They must have like really annoyed the broadcasters or something, because they just never show them. Even when they have decent races, they never really show them. But it's Alfa Romeo. It's Kimi Raikkonen, and he's seeing out his last couple of races until he drifts off into obscurity again, and we never hear from him again because he doesn't like being in the media. So yeah, it's fine. You know, it was an okay performance in the end, apparently. But again, we never see it because we never do. Because I mean, we are getting a great championship fight, and that's fantastic to see. But sometimes I just wish that they would focus a little bit more on the midfield battles and the battles at the back of the track. We don't need to see Lewis Hamilton driving around the track for 30 laps. Or Max Verstappen driving around for 30 laps. You know, it's last season we saw some amazing midfield battles because Hamilton was out there on its own, and the battles with Ferrari and McLaren and Racing Point and everything going through was really great to see, and brought a lot of attention to those teams that don't normally get a lot of TV time. And because the title battle has been so good this year, rightly so, you know, a lot of the focus has been on those front drivers, but we don't have to sit there watching them every single lap. We can go back, and you know, you can, if you want to have that little on the scoreboard, the little tiny window that's got, you know, Lewis Hamilton driving around and or switching between him and Verstappen, that's fine. Do that. People can still see it, but then focus on the action, because we're seeing some great battles that just, well, we just don't see them. You know, unless you've got sometimes the races, for me, the most exciting thing about the races is me sitting there watching the live timing, working out the, like today, I was working out the gap with Norris and Gasly for about 20 minutes and say, yeah, he's still got a pit window. Yep, two stop is definitely the wrong way to go. But we don't get any of that. And, you know, I don't want to see loads and loads of AWS graphics all over the screen all the time, but sometimes just do a little bit more to help the viewer see the full picture of the race, because this is why people say F1 is boring sometimes, because you have a race like this that the battle for the lead was never really a battle. We knew as soon as we got down to turn one who was going to win that race, realistically, barring puncture or virtual safety car at the wrong time or reliability. We always knew who was going to win that race. But there were some good battles panning out, which we hardly ever saw. And I know this isn't really relating to Kimi Raikkonen because he didn't really have any battles, but it's a good opportunity to ever to say, look, these teams need to get more TV time because they're just not getting it. And it's just a little frustrating. And for such a great season, it would just be great if we could just see a little bit more of these battles towards the back there, because this is a reason why that they don't see the value in re-signing people like Antonio Giovinazzi and people like that, because they just never see them on TV, and they're not worth it for the team to take a risk on, because they're not exciting, because no one ever sees them. But yeah, to ask me what Raikkonen did today, I have absolutely no idea. I think I saw him once and that was it.
The only time I remember seeing him on screen was when he was, I can't remember who he was fighting against, but he was coming up behind someone up to turn one, and then they did a really late move to the left and he had to jerk to the left pretty quickly.
I seem to remember one moment he was either being overtaken or overtaking someone. I remember seeing him once, I think, and that was it.
Well, I don't remember who that was overtaking. It was Latifi. Tom, another very... This is the episode which...
Yeah, Tom is on fire.
He's going on rants, though, yeah. So
I need to do zero prep more often.
just do rants every time you come on.
Yeah.
It's a good point you make, Tom, because we don't need to see... It reminds you guys of the Schumacher years, where you just see one car in block colour go around some new circuit for 50 laps, and we don't need to see 9 second gaps. Like, we don't need to see how many cars there are between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton. And it's, you know what, I'll make a point. It's probably more TV time if you have a crash at this point. Like, the Latifi probably got more TV time than Kimi Raikkonen did the entire time he was in the thing.
It paid more to go and blow a tire than it did to actually just be driving around, which is like NASCAR. Almost. It's the same kind of thing. So it's kind of interesting how that works. I mean, it is, you know, Liberty Media, and maybe they're taking similar pages from the American broadcast when it comes to NASCAR, and when they're only showing the leader. But I mean, I'm a fan of the guy who won, but still, I would have rather seen a battle, because the midfield battle is interesting. I would like to know what the heck AlphaTauri was doing today. I would like to know what was going on with McLaren. You know, that would have been more intrigue in that, because Ferrari's, you know, like, Ferrari has made this move. Okay, go and talk to somebody at Ferrari. You have Kravitz there. I mean, like, give us some other stories. Give us something to chew on while we know what's going to happen. It would be a novel concept. And we're getting to the end of the year anyway. And these teams, you know, give us some more human interest kind of bits. Considering these people that are going out to the racetrack and preparing these cars for these teams are really having to do more than they ever have. That would be more interesting than most of the race was, to be fair.
Yeah. There was another time as well when there's another TV direction thing. It's like, I can't remember. It's another battle. I can't remember who it was. And then someone gets past, and then they cut away to the crowd. Someone cheering in the crowd, and then with Perez getting past somebody, and then they cut away to the crowd, people cheering, and then we look, and then whoever it was is trying to get past Pat Perez again. We haven't seen it because we're seeing someone in the crowd celebrating something that doesn't even matter because the battle's still going on. So why are they cutting away to something else?
I believe it was Ocon, which is probably one of the batters of the race, to be honest.
Exactly.
In mind, he was the first guy to actually defend it.
So why are we not seeing it? Why are we watching someone in the crowd? Wow, God, I don't know.
And I love the whole bit where Fernando's like, tell Esteban to battle like a lion or whatever the heck he said. And then he fell over like a freaking dead horse when Sergio Perez got to him. So that was great. That was the absolute opposite of what Fernando Alonso did in defending.
Still better than Bottas. Still better than Bottas.
Well, better than Valtteri Bottas at this point. We haven't even gotten to him, but that, my goodness. I mean, he's going to be the nondescript Finn in the Alfa Romeo next year. So we'll get to say, oh, we only saw him once today. Okay. And then Guan Yu Zhou will probably do like Yuki Tsunoda stuff and crash for like the first few races. And then he'll just be nondescript, just like Giovinazzi. So we'll see how that whole thing works next year.
Yeah. Speaking of Valtteri Bottas, the person he's replacing next year, we've got Antonio Giovinazzi next. I'm sure that's not exactly how it works out, but Sam, this is almost exactly why he's being replaced, because you've got Kimi Räikkönen, who admittedly did start one place above him, but one's the new guy who should have a lot of promise, and the other guy is a guy on his last legs. On the last legs, that's a bit unfair to Räikkönen, but you know, seeing out his F1 career, that's. It, you know, do you reckon Giovinazzi cares anymore?
No. I wouldn't. If I'd just been told, oh yeah, you're being let go, mate. Sorry. Thanks for your hard work over the last 3 years, you know. See you later, best of your future endeavours. But we're bringing in a Chinese driver who brings a lot more money than you, so sling your rook. But Giovinazzi, I mean, he's got his driving Formula E lined up already, hasn't he? So I think he's probably just thinking, yeah, whatever, it's over now. I'll just do these last couple of races and into the sunset he goes. And yeah, as you say, it's kind of been the story of his whole time in F1. We've not really seen what he can do because he's been in one of the worst cars on the grid consistently for the whole time he's been in the sport. It comes back to what Tom was saying about the TV direction. We just don't see what Alfa Romeo are doing ever. Like I remember when 2018 when Charles Leclerc was in the car. I remember when we saw quite a lot of him that year. But ever since then, Alfa Romeo has been on really downward spiral in general. And now they're going to be beaten by Williams this season. And is they're only being saved from being last by Haas, and obviously Haas are their own sad story, aren't they, really? So yeah, Giovinazzi, another race down, you know, that's it. That's all I've got to say on that, really. It's hard to say anything else about him, really. I do feel a bit sorry for him. And the Italian Jesus is going to be missed for sure, I think.
Yeah, it's a bit difficult to say too much about the back of the grid, but it's okay.
Yeah, in general.
Because
in general, yeah.
It's okay, because Mick Schumacher was 16th, Phil.
They even interviewed him. They had Jensen and Damon and whatever. Simon interviewed him, and he actually said he fancied their chances against the Alfa Romeos today. And, you know, he showed up for whatever it's worth, for what that piece of garbage he has to drive every week is. I mean, the fact that he finished ahead of a couple cars is nice generally, but you know, like when you come into this whole year has been a nightmare scenario for him. But you know, to finish only one lap down in this race, comprehensively beat your teammate, not only in qualifying but in the race, I mean, that's really all you can say. It's data. Learning new circuits, getting more experience, hoping that Haas in some way, shape, or form is going to bring a car that can actually compete in some way next year. Because I feel like Williams is going to take a step forward Even with the driver change to Alex Albon, I feel like they're in a much better scenario than either the Sauber Alfa Romeo team or the Haas team. But we will see. But credit to Mick keeping it clean. I mean, he did have one very sketchy re-entry onto the track on the next last corner when he went off. I forget who he was about to chop off there in the process, but that was kind of sketchy. I thought it was Mazepin when I saw it, but then it was actually Mick. So that was kind of a bit argy-bargy, kind of dodgy maneuvering. But then I guess he's been watching too many videos of his teammate driving.
Yeah.
I think it was Alonso that he cut up on the, when he came on track.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. After that, we've got it's not his fault in some ways that he's ended up where he is, but unfortunately the Williams didn't have too much pace anyway. It's George Russell in 17th. Again, he's just kind of seeing out the year, really, but it's a shame to see that Williams go backwards as it has in the last few races.
Yeah, I have a bit of a theory with George Russell in that that he doesn't want to be risking himself for the rest of the season, putting his life on the line in a car that's not going to improve when he's, you know, for no reason. They've got eighth place. He's going to finish where he is in the constructors. So I think he's not phoning it in as such. He's still racing, but he's racing to enjoy himself. He's not gonna push himself out of that envelope where he's been putting, you know, the car on that edge, absolutely sometimes beyond the edge. He's done his job for the season, and the worst thing that could happen now, I know it's a slightly different scenario, but the worst thing that could happen to George now is what happened to Robert Kubica. You know, he's got that deal signed in for the top team, ready for the next season. Then he goes off rallying and then ends up having an accident and ruining his career. So I'm not saying like that would have happened, because again, he's still racing in Formula One, and if you can't race in Formula One, then you probably shouldn't be in Formula One. So it's not that he's just not trying, but he's certainly not putting that extra X factor amount in there, because Latifi has definitely been closer to him in the last few races. He seemed to have a lot more for Latifi than Latifi at this race, but I think partially that's down to just the natural gap in talent and the fact that neither of them have been at this track before. So just the cream will rise when there's no experience deficit. As Latifi's got more experience, he's got better, but Russell has just got that natural talent that just keeps him way ahead of Latifi. But yeah, again, didn't see a lot from him today. He had the puncher, and which kind of ruined his race, but he still finished ahead of one driver who didn't have a problem. So I guess you could say that's an achievement. That's it really again. George just kind of, again, just ticking over till the end of the season. But, I mean, it's been a good season for him. So we shouldn't judge him on these last few races. We should judge him on what he did at the first two-thirds of the season, because that's what's really made his season, and that's what's made him deserve that seat.
Yeah, 100%. I don't want to go too hard on Nicky Mazepin here, because obviously the car is a bit terrible. You know, it's got to be difficult knowing that you're going to be last, every week. But, you know, he got 18th, didn't he, Sam?
Yeah, he finished the race. 55 laps he completed out of 57. I'm sure he's done worse than that this year. I mean, he's only 2 laps down.
Does kind of seem that he's been negatively affected significantly more at this track than any other, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was one, well, I mentioned it before we went live, but there was one point I saw, no idea what lap it was. He was like a minute and, I don't know, 15 seconds behind Mick. I don't know. And it's just another indictment as to how kind of far off the pace he is in general. I mean, he's shown flashes this year of having a somewhat decent control of the car. I mean, one good performance I remember out of him was Monaco, I believe. I think he drove relatively well there in the car that's obviously terrible. But yeah, there's not much more to really say with Mazepin. I guess he's going to be there next year. Will the car be any better? I mean, you'd hope so, because they've kind of put all their what's that saying? All their eggs into one basket with next year, with them not really developing the car for this year at all. So, yeah, it's a, It's another weekend for Mazepin to get more experience, I guess, and try and get on more of the pace of his teammate and the rest of the grid. Obviously, it's very difficult in a car that's a dog. So,
yeah clearly. it's seeing out the rest of the season. Maybe Jeddah and Abu Dhabi will suit them better.
It's like they're at the, what's that sport where they say they're at the beaches already? Is that football where they say they're already like? What's that? I can't remember what sport it is, but they're just saying,
beyond me.
I don't know, but they're at the beach. He's at the beach already. He's kind of just thinking like, oh yeah, the season's done. Maybe, you know. I'll move on. Enough stuff to say.
Yeah. Last driver to add a bit of intrigue to the proceedings of the race is Nicholas Latifi, Phil. Do you think maybe, you know, it's kind of the same with George Russell as well, that Williams have actually pushed this strategy a bit too hard, trying to do that one stop, and they've kind of snookered themselves into quite bad results here?
I mean, it's possible. I think what Tom was saying in regards to George makes a lot of sense. In the case of Latifi, I mean, what are you really racing for? You're not going to get a point. You are trying to, I guess, get the best result you can. In their mind, they thought a one-stop was going to be that result, but other teams are starting to go on to the two-stop strategy. I mean, even Sergio Perez was called in an inopportune way to go into a two-stop, and he maximized what he could given the circumstances, in the sense of you go and give yourself your best result. It might have made more sense for Latifi to come in, take another stop. I don't think the gaps were so bad. I mean, maybe it was a case of they didn't feel like he was going to be able to make up the gap. I don't know. But having a damaged race car and having to go and retire it from the race is worse than, you know, having to make an extra pit stop, honestly. And Latifi, you know, wants to finish the season well and get some good momentum going into 22 with a new car and a new teammate, you would assume. But, you know, I guess it is what it is for Williams. They made their year a few months ago with all those results with George and the Q3 performances, and once that happened, I think Williams' year was really done in a lot of ways. And once George was assigned, I think that really was the last thing nailed for them to where they were going to start focusing on 2022. So it's really about preservation and safety more than results at the end of this season for them.
Yeah. You mentioned preservation and safety there. Now, bookending the list of runners is Valtteri Bottas. He retired the car on lap 48, a few laps from the end. Now, in my opinion, I think once they've realised that Bottas wasn't going forwards with the damage after the initial puncture, which beforehand he was actually in fairly good position, I would have said. Tom, do you think that, you know, leaving him out that long and then retiring him just the same anyway was really the best move strategically from a power unit perspective, I mean? Or do you think maybe they should have, like I say, once they realised he wasn't going to go any forward, should have just retired him and allowed him to sort of live to fight another day when it comes to the championship?
Well, I mean, he's got more power units in the pool than anyone else, so I don't think there's any issue with wear in that sense. And I think they'll be saving their best engine for the last two races. So I don't think there's an issue with that sense. I was surprised when they did retire him when they did, because either, you know, you retire him straight away, as you said, or you keep him out until the end, knowing that Verstappen would likely, I mean, he didn't know what was going to happen with the virtual safety cars and stuff, but, you know, the likelihood is that Verstappen would have had at least a pit stop gap back, so he would be going for the fastest lap. And if they'd have kept Bottas there, they could have boxed him from last if needed, and then stopped him for the fastest lap to take it away from Verstappen like they did last time out. So it was surprising, but the only thing I can think is that there was floor damage to that car and that he wouldn't have had the pace for fastest lap, especially with Verstappen in the end coming in for soft. So I think it probably hasn't actually cost him anything in the end, but you know, they weren't to know that. His race though, I was he's very unlucky. I know obviously they probably just pushed it a little too far on those tyres, but he, apart from the early phases where he couldn't overtake those few cars, once he did get ahead of those cars and into clear air, I think he had the pace for the podium quite comfortably. I think he was going to sit there in that gap behind Verstappen on a one-stop strategy and then mess with Verstappen's racer that he couldn't make that late stop for a tyre change for the fastest lap. So it's ended up quite costly for Mercedes in the Constructors' Championship battle that he's had that puncture, which is a shame. And I do feel sorry for him because I feel sorry for everyone who got a grid penalty for the start of this race, because you know that the yellow flag was on, the yellow flag was off, there was double wave yellows, there were single wave yellows, and it was all so late on. I don't understand why Sainz didn't get a penalty and Bottas did, just because Bottas was slightly faster. You know, clearly Sainz didn't back off. So I just feel like he's had a bit of a bad run of it this weekend. He's had all the bad luck. And that's really been the story of his career with Mercedes. His bad luck has just kind of followed him. He's been the one that's had the bad luck. It's been very occasionally has it been on Lewis's side. And you could say that you make your own luck in Formula One, but it just seems to be slightly disproportionately on Bottas's side. I don't say for one moment that if he'd have had all of the luck that he would have still won a world championship, because I don't think he would have done. But it's certainly, he's not as bad as the points table makes out. Definitely not. So I feel a little bit sorry for Valtteri Bottas today, which is something that I don't normally do. But today I definitely do.
Yeah, and with Valtteri Bottas sort of in the books, that wraps up proceedings. I just want to go around your driver of the day, really. I'll start with you, Sam. Who do you think was driver of the day?
Fernando Alonso, actually. I think it's quite easy for me. First of all, awesome to see him back on the podium for the first time in 7 years. Great to see Alpine up there as well. Took the tyres very long way to the end. Could have easily have got a puncture, but managed to keep him out of the puncture range. Maybe got a tad lucky with the VSC keeping Perez back, because I didn't notice the Perez was after the VSC was kind of almost on the last kind of lap of running. He was like 2 seconds behind Alonso, so. Yeah, another lap he might have got him, but still a fantastic drive from Alonso to get an Alpine on the podium when the Red Bulls and Mercedes are miles quicker than them. Yeah, just Fernando Alonso for me.
And you, Phil?
Yeah, I agree with Sam on Fernando Alonso. It's one of his best weekends he's had in his return, and I think the new track and the way he had to drive it, all that the car was there for him, it might be a positive sign for the next race as well, being at a new circuit. But yeah, I think Fernando Alonso was the guy this race. Took advantage of his move up in position and made the most of his day. And unlike other teams that weren't able to make the one stop work, he was able to make the one stop work and get his first podium in 7 years.
You, Tom?
I think for once the fans got it right on driver of the day. Although only 28% of them voted for Alonso, so I'd love to know who the other 72% or 60% actually voted for, because
Max Verstappen
was. Okay, fine. Well, I said earlier about the fact you go to a new track and then the general talent shows through, and that's the case here. You know, he's obviously a talented driver. He has blown a little hot and cold this year, but on the as a whole, generally, when Alpine have been decent, he's performed. You know, he's well ahead of his teammate in the championship, and his teammate very fortuitously won a race. So that just shows how much you know, at how much class a driver in his 40s against a young charger has got. So no, it's probably his best race of the season, I think, and certainly his best performance I've seen from him in a few years. So going back to the old the McLaren days of that was my best ever race, you know, that he would say every race. It's certainly back up there with those performances. No, I completely agree, Fernando Alonso for driver of the day as well.
I'm going to butt the trend here, and I'm not going to go with like Fernando Alonso. I'm going to go with Charles Leclerc, because I think that was pretty good to get from 13th to 8th. That's, you know, that's obviously not great from Sainz ahead of him, but I think Charles Leclerc did an excellent job, and he's part and parcel of the reason why I don't see McLaren getting anywhere near Ferrari at this point. And to me, it was clearly McLaren's to lose. That third place in the Constructors' Championship. And now it's better luck next year for them. That's who I'm going with. So we are just to come to the end of the show. We're now available on Verbal, as well as Amazon Music, YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Omni Studio, and Pocket Cast. Just search F1 Grid Talk. We have a large back catalogue of shows of over 150 episodes now, including interviews with Mario Isola. So I'm sure those will be good to look back on based on the failures we had today. Even though it might be the team's fault, to be honest. And we have retrospective pieces also on Tyregate and Senna. If you're still stuck to do stuff for what to do between shows, then hopefully my lovely guests here will be able to take it away and tell you where to find them. Phil, where can we find you?
You can find the Gripster podcast basically anywhere there are podcasts, like Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, Pandora, et cetera, et cetera. We talk about Formula One. We talk about motorsports here in the U.S. As long as it goes fast, generally, we talk about it on the Gripstrip podcast. And Josh and I talk about all that. And we talk about the NFL, other sports, depending on the time and day. So, yep. It's a good show. We're 80 plus episodes in, we'll get to 100 next year, but it's a good time. So thanks for having us on here again this week on Grid Talk, as always.
It's a pleasure to have you. Tom, where can we find you?
So I'm on the Monkey Seats, which is at Monkey Seat Pod on the socials, monkeyseatpod.com. We cover, similar to Phil's, we cover a lot of motorsport. We tend to focus more on the European-based formulas, but we do cover IndyCar as well, dabble in things like Extreme E and W Series, and do enjoy talking about the junior formula as well. But predominantly Formula One, especially at the moment, given everything else is shut down. Again, me and Carl, just two mates having a laugh, talking about things quite low-key, a couple of hot takes. He's the idiot, I'm the expert. And that's how we go about our racing, similar to the AlphaTauri technique, actually.
That's excellent. He's the idiot, I'm the expert. I need to steal that. Sam, can we find you anywhere?
No, I don't have I don't have anything to plug. Just check these other guys out. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I've backed you into a corner there.
Don't worry about that. I should probably get off my ass and do a podcast or something else I'm interested in. Maybe something to do with history, maybe, I'm not sure, but I'd have to actually put some effort into it.
All right. If you're still stuck with it, like if you're stuck even after that, after listening to these two great shows, check out our subreddit F1 Grid Talk to give us suggestions on what we can do to improve the show, and perhaps subscribe to our Patreon for mics, lights, and better recording equipment for our presenters, particularly at this time of year where you can't really front light yourself off windows and it gets a bit sort of incandescent in here. We will be back, I believe, next Sunday. Is Sunday or Monday to preview the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, much as it pains me to do so. But thank you very much for watching, and goodbye.